The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
You're checking on the speakers.
So here in the West, Buddhism is often considered a religion, and sometimes there are expectations of what religions will provide. And there's many, many expectations, associations to that. But one of the more maybe profound, one of the more profound aspects that's expected to be provided by religions is some sense of human nature, some idea of fundamental human nature, what it is, what's going on. And there tends to be two huge categories that of human nature that different religious views espouse. One is that something like the human innate goodness. Another would be innate badness. Though I've never heard anyone say it that way. But you know, here in the West, we have the idea of original sin. That's fairly common. And in Buddhism itself, it's not as explicit, but you do find that range within all the wide range of Buddhist teachings. We have teachings that posit what's called sometimes the Buddha nature, that each of us has Buddha nature, that we have something, you know, really beautiful and wonderful inside and in our essence. And then we have teachings that, kind of emphasis that emphasizes it's pretty awful in there. We have we're just kind of filled with greed, hate, and delusion, and that's kind of characterizes much of human life and in society. And you know, we have to, you know, that's kind of it focuses on how bad it is in there and how we have to do something about this badness. So this range of that exists. Of some kind of like divine spark, something innately good, something very special that we have in our nature, and something about that our nature is somehow flawed, and so in the flawed nature, we have to somehow cope with that, deal with that, overcome that. As I read the early teachings of the goes back to the Buddha himself, I get the impression that he wasn't viewing human beings, searching for a particular human nature that defines it definitively who we are. And rather, how I read these texts, the focus is more on our potential. And we have a variety of innate potentials. And we have the innate potential to move in directions of great goodness, great beauty. And in fact, the early tradition has a word, Brahma, which can be translated as divine. And sometimes they use that word for our potential. We can move into kind of divine states of being. And we also have the potential to move into awful states of being. We're capable of moving into areas and fields of great evil or harm. There's a very powerful word in this early tradition, which in America, unfortunately, is papa. And papa in Pali means kind of, usually translated as evil. One translator calls it deadening, that which is deadening, activities we do that, you know. And so we have these potentials and go in these two different directions. And the question is, which direction do we go? And so rather than positing we have a particular nature, we have a potential. And the potential can go in a variety of different. It's almost like our innate nature is of two kinds. And to go either towards the good or towards the bad. And it depends, you know, on conditions, which of those routes we take. And so this points to the teachings that I was talking about last week of the emphasis on conditionality, on conditions. And putting in place conditions that allow certain things to cultivate and grow and develop. And so we have a choice, we have some choice, or we can act as if we have choice, and acting as if we have choice makes the world a difference. Because by acting, we can make choices to bring about the conditions, we can make a choice to move in the direction of goodness, to tap into the potential within us that cultivates and develops goodness. Or we could make choices to do the opposite. And occasionally there are people who intentionally choose that, but sometimes it's not so intentional or conscious, but people do sometimes choose anger or hostility or hate or greed, and that's the route they take. And that puts in place very different conditions than if we act on love or generosity, kindness. And so we have this choice. Let's wait a minute. Wait a minute. Okay. So I think it's helpful to think that we have choice. And choice is that's where we discover, or that's where we find what's beautiful about us or what is ugly about us in our choice. It begins with choice. And so have you consciously thought about what kind of life you want to live? Have you consciously thought about the choices you want to make, the directions you want to go in your life? And what's nice about this is that the emphasis is on the choice that you make now. And a wonderful idea that I kind of picked up a long time ago was the idea that your life always begins anew now. You don't have to burden yourself too much with what happened in the past. You can learn from the past and try to do better based on the past, but to stay stuck in the judgments and the ideas and the of the past in such a way that you don't make healthy or appropriate choices now is not necessary. In a sense, you can start all over again. Every day you wake up, there can be a new choice. Every moment there can be a new choice. And I think that in the teachings of the Buddha, this idea that now is the place of choice, now is the place to start a new life, is emphasized indirectly over and over again. In the teachings on karma, for example, are mostly teachings on pay attention to now. It's not about what you did in the past that's going to bite you today. It's not so much about how to take care of your future so much, little bit more that, but it's really, the emphasis is pay attention to your choices now, because now those choices, they're going to set the direction of your life into the future. And it can feel like a big burden to have choice like this, but I think the idea is to have some very simple ideas of or vision of the direction you want to go, or the way that you want to live your life, and then hopefully some confidence that it's worth doing that you can do it, you can choose for that. So the simple choice, for example, of being bitter or being kind or being angry, choosing anger. You might not be able to choose whether or not you're angry, but you have a choice about whether you feed the anger or align yourself with the anger or go along with the anger. Or the choice to go, even if you're angry, the choice to, respecting the anger, not repressing it, but to not act on it, but instead to act the best you can on a different sentiment, different direction. And it might just mean that you choose to keep your mouth shut. And that could be pretty powerful. To not speak the anger, but to keep quiet, because those create better conditions for everyone, for yourself and the people around you. And then later you might be able to figure out the appropriate conversation you need to have with someone. So, to consider what you want your life to be based on, the values, the purpose, the direction, the meaning, that is where we find out what your human nature is about, or what aspect of your human nature you want to move towards, or that you want to feed and develop and grow and for yourself. So rather than looking at human nature as something fixed, it's actually something you can influence and develop. The Buddha seemed to say that if you have the idea that your nature, your innate human nature, is good, then people are less likely to want to practice, to do anything about themselves. If they feel their innate nature is bad, well, then it's kind of hopeless, so why practice? And so for the Buddha, it seems that the idea of potentiality, of conditionality, of nothing fixed, there's no fixed nature, is a best kind of circumstance, best understanding, in which to be motivated to try to practice, to cultivate, to develop, to move forward on a path of spirituality of some kind. And in his case, it was a path of liberation. And so we put together conditions. The other thing that's nice about this conditionality, choosing conditions, is, I think I talked about this last week, is that it's different than choosing to be the causal agent. When we say, if we want to move in a direction in our life, we want to move towards greater goodness, develop our good capacities and kindness and compassion and generosity and many things. If we decide that we're going to make that happen, sometimes we just kind of mess it up. It makes it sometimes more difficult to be the causal agent, because it might not be something that belongs to the causal networks of our neural pathways or something. Because partly causal networks, the cause, is a very narrow part of the whole kind of ecology of the heart and the mind and of our social life. Whereas when we put together conditions, we're putting together a wider field of factors that can begin influencing how we feel and what happens and what evolves and what develops. So, for example, if I decide that I want to become more equanimous about life, maybe, and I decided to do it, I've never been there, so maybe it's the wrong example. Maybe it's the wrong example anyway, if I apologize ahead of time. But I'll take my chances. I decide to see if I can cultivate equanimity on the floor of the kind of the stock market, the floor of the, what is it called, the stock market exchange in New York. Trading, Wall Street, just on the floor. With the photographs I've seen, people are yelling and screaming and standing there, and it's a very exciting place, I'm sure. And I don't think it's the place where it's the great manifestation of generosity, or I don't know. Maybe there's a lot of kindness there. I don't know, but I'd imagine that maybe you can think of a better circumstance, but then the example I'm drawing up. But I can imagine that's a difficult circumstance to become calm and equanimous. And if I go someplace, a quiet meditation center where everyone's quiet and calm and settled, those conditions let my muscles relax. Those conditions settle my sense of caution and apprehension. I'm not worried that someone's going to run over me as they run across the exchange floor, and I'm sitting there quietly in my cushion. It's like there's all these other factors come into play that support me in becoming equanimous. So that was probably a very poor example, trying to say that if we focus only on being the cause to make something happen, we might focus too narrowly, and we're supported by a wide range of conditions. And the idea is to create and put in place those conditions that make it more likely that our whole system begins to move and change and be influenced in a good way. So, and so there is a degree of choice about what conditions we put in place, where we meditate, the kind of people we spend time with, how we spend our time, the kind of influences we have. You know, how much time we spend on monitors is a big issue for many people these days. I've noticed that in myself that I have to be careful how much I'm on the computer, and especially how much I'm on the web, because I've noticed, especially in the evening, I'd be happily on it for a little while, and then I find that there's kind of this propelling momentum inside of me to just look at one more thing. You know, let's not get out of the seat. You know, there's important things going on here. Let's see what next. You know, it's like, you know, and so I have to watch because it seems like I've put together the conditions for this acquisitive kind of movement of the mind that it starts having a life of its own, and it has a kind of pleasure to pursue it, or a kind of, you know, drive that's not really that pleasant. And so I've learned to see that, and when I see that, I usually use that as my signal that it's time to stop, because I don't find that very useful. But if I don't, you know, I've known people who've gotten pretty addicted to that world and pretty debilitated, exhausted, stayed up late, you know, it kind of makes conditions very different. So conditionality and this idea that we're not necessarily in charge of everything, but we are in charge of the choices we make. And then it's kind of like put the conditions in place the best you can, and then trust the Dharma. Put the conditions in place, and then make space and allow for something which is not you to operate. And what that not you-ness is, you could, you know, who knows? But there's a, you know, it might all be inside of you, because we have this huge, you know, inner ecology that's much more sophisticated than you are, much more developed than you in terms of your what you can be self-consciously aware of about yourself. And so to put in the conditions that allows this huge apparatus that we have to operate effectively in the direction of our goodness is the name of the game. And so we have some choice, and we have to keep asserting that choice, but we also at the same time is not take too much responsibility. So this idea of being responsible for the choices, but not necessarily responsible to making things happen, or not necessarily responsible for how it unfolds, is kind of the balance, the act of this whole approach. So I sometimes sit down to meditate, and my intention is to be present for whatever is here. And I might, in the back of my mind, have some idea, I'm going to get nice and calm, or, you know, I'm going to get concentrated. But I sit down, and I'm going to be present. So that's a choice. I'm going to be present for what's here. And then as I'm present for what's here, sometimes the Dharma has other things in mind for me than becoming concentrated or becoming calm. And I find that very interesting, because then I get to study that. I get to be mindful of that and see what's going on. And I kind of trust that whatever shows up is the task of the moment, as opposed to getting upset and angry because it's not going the way I expected it to go. So this balance between making choices and being relaxed about the effect of that, or being relaxed around that, and to make choices in a way where the choices are not demanding, where the choices don't have expectations built into them, where the choices have not a lot of self-identification with them. Look at me, I'm making good choice. But rather to make choices over and over again in a very relaxed, light-hearted, open way, putting together those conditions. And then the Buddha, when he described this unfolding that happens from the conditions being in place, used all kinds of analogies or similes from the natural world to describe the natural flow. And one of those natural flows that I'm fond of is that of rain falling on a mountainside. and I've talked about this before. So he talks about when the rain falls on the mountain, starts rolling down the slope, and then the raindrops start falling into the and filling the clefts, the little gaps in the mountainside. And then when those are full, it overflows and it fills the gullies. And when those are full, it overflows and fills the creeks. And the creeks flow down and fill the ponds. And the ponds, when they get full, overflow and flow down to fill the lakes. And when the lakes get full, they overflow and fill the rivers that go down to the ocean and end up in the ocean. And so this example of, you know, something is coming along and we take our fill of it or fills us, and when it's full, that's a condition for it to spill over and move into the next thing that unfolds. And Buddha said that if you have a confidence or faith in the practice and how the practice unfolds, in our potential, the possibility of moving in a good direction, that when the confidence gets strong enough and big enough, fills the gullies, maybe, gully full of confidence, you don't need that much, then it overflows into gladness. And gladness, when it gets full enough, it overflows to joy. And joy, when it gets full enough, overflows to tranquility. And tranquility, when it gets full enough, flows into happiness. And happiness, when it gets full enough, flows over to concentration. So it goes all the way until we get to the ocean of freedom. But the way he describes it, it's just the water, that's the nature of water, to flow in a certain direction. If we put conditions in place, good conditions in place, and we make space and allow for some profound inner potential to unfold, it will flow in a good way. But the Buddha used the same analogy of the raindrops going down the mountainside for the opposite. That if you choose unwholesome or unskillful or evil states, if you choose to be hostile, for example, or angry, or all described a list of different kind of painful states that people can choose. If you choose those are conditions that do the same thing, but then what it flows into over time, the bigger and bigger pools of water and rivers, and becomes, you know, more and more painful and more difficult. So the idea, there's, you know, the conditionality can keep unfolding and developing, so be careful what conditions you put in place. Interestingly, the Buddha also used this idea of the natural flow of the rain down the mountainside to describe the effects that a good person has on society, on others. That a good person who's interested in, who's living for the welfare, happiness, and just one more, for the welfare and happiness of others, that person's influence will act in the world the same way, suggesting that maybe even in the wider world, the focus is not so much on causing change, but rather putting in place the conditions for change. And part of that condition is bringing our goodness into the world, into what we do in the world. And then there's also a natural unfolding, a natural flow that can go from there. And so I find it very inspiring myself, this emphasis on conditionality as opposed to the emphasis on causality. I find that it frees me from taking a lot of the burden of personal responsibility, but it does give me the lightness or the inspiration of personal choice, because I'm not expecting you to choose for me. It has to be, you know, I have to choose. And so it's not a burden to have to choose. It feels like certainly a privilege. It feels like a wonderful thing. It feels to me, the idea of choosing how I am in the world, how I am for the next moment, how I encounter someone, you know, it can be done in such a way that it itself feels really good. It itself feels light and easy and opening. One of the things that I find very helpful about this emphasis on conditionality is I don't have to take on the burden of the world, which is kind of, you know, the world's pretty heavy. And the sense of obligation that can come, and the sense of we have to do something about all the suffering of the world, you know, that sense of burden and obligation, that in itself is a condition that opens up to some, that moves in a certain direction. And at least as I've paid attention to myself, I don't feel it's created a very good condition in me to move to in a good direction in my life when I take on the burdens of the world as an obligation that I have to deal with it. It can sound very cruel, it can sound very privileged, it can sound very cold to say that, but I feel confident in saying that, at least for myself, because I recognize in me that I can be greatly inspired to want to respond to the suffering of the world, the conditions of the world. I don't take it on as a burden, but I do take it on as an act of generosity. I do take it on as something to be inspired. I do take it on, or I do kind of see, it's more like I don't take it on at all. It's rather a wellspring that flows from out of me that this is what wants to happen. And so what wants to happen is to respond to the suffering of the world. But I'm not choosing it. I've chosen to kind of stay open and present for this world that I live in. And to the degree to which I'm equanimous, peaceful, at ease, connected, my heart resonates with what goes on in the world. And there's a movement, a desire arising out of the heart to be responsive. And that desire to be responsive, I trust. For myself, I don't trust the burden and obligation to change. And what I found in myself, that I have a lot more energy to be involved in supporting and helping the world if the motivation comes from the heart as a condition of the heart than if it comes from the demands of the mind and the expectations of how I should be and what should happen. When I live from a sense of a burden and obligation, it's a condition for me to get tired. And it's also a condition where I feel I can never do enough. And it just seems like so daunting. But when the motivation arises from within, then it doesn't really matter that, you know, in a certain way, how much I get to do. I just feel so happy to be able to be engaged. And that sustains me so much better than the other way. So conditionality, putting in conditions. I want to respond to the world. That's a desire. I want to respond to the suffering of the world. I base my life on this desire. And so what are the conditions that support me to do that? For me, personally, I found the conditions that most support it is to be at ease, to have a degree of equanimity and peace, and sense of well-being, being settled here. And then the motivation, the desire to act in the world flows out of me. I found that the opposite is not a good condition for me. Obligation, demand, expectation for myself, or expectation from others. That I found is not a very supportive condition. And since I want to be supportive in the world, that's my desire and what I've learned about myself, I've chosen to have no obligation to respond. Now, is that cruel? Is that indifferent? I think not. Not in the way I described it, I hope. So we have choice, but we're not necessarily in control of the consequences of our choices. But we do have a choice. It's good to be thoughtful and considerate about this issue of conditions and choices. And choices have a lot to do with your vision. What is your vision of your life? What kind of person do you want to be in this world? Rather than looking for your true nature, what is your true vision for who you want to be? And if it seems like a realistic vision, what are the conditions you have to put in place to make it happen? And your life begins fresh and new every day, every moment. And so at any moment that you find yourself in, you don't have to be weighed down by the past as much as you can say, okay, from now, I'm going to live this way. And maybe you're successful for 2 seconds. But don't underestimate the value of those 2 seconds, because then you can do it again and again and again. And it begins to shape you, begins to change you, begins to influence you, putting in conditions. And slowly over time, much quicker than you ever realize, you'll change dramatically for the better. Finally, I'll say that in terms of change, all of us, whether we thought about it or not, every moment of our life, we're being conditioned by something. And one of the big influences is how we think, what we think about. It's a big conditioning. And some people have been thinking one way for decades, and it's shaping them and conditioning them a certain way. Once people start practicing and beginning to change the conditions of their mind, it's remarkable how quickly we can change. Though it doesn't seem that fast because we're looking at our stopwatch, you know, looking for the change. But if you can think about how many mind moments you've had so far, you know, you don't need to, it's not like one-to-one, that you have to have all the same number of mind moments to balance out all you've done before. It's a small fraction of all the mind moments you've used in the past to condition yourself that are needed to make a big change. So it's possible. So those are my thoughts, and hopefully this idea of choice, by the time I finish this talk, I emphasize how you have choice, that you're not taking it on as a burden, because that would not be a good condition. So we have about 5 minutes, and some of you have the choice about whether to ask a question or comment or anything you'd like.
Thank you. This bit about taking the burden. Last week when you talked about setting 3 conditions in particular, generosity, morality, and loving kindness, I found I was in a very difficult situation. I was taking some clients camping, and the clients weren't difficult and the camping wasn't difficult, but my coworker, I could say, was difficult, or I found her difficult. And it was very important to get to those 3 conditions. And as I realized that, it opened up all kinds of wonderful ways of being generous and everything, I also realized that I felt a great deal of compassion for my coworker, because she couldn't find a different way to work in that situation. And I wanted to take that burden on. And I realized
the burden of being compassionate for her.
No, the burden of helping her, changing her, helping her to find an easier way, because she was clearly distressed. And it's not my burden. I can only set the conditions, and I still had a lot of joy for the positive things that happened.
So did you try to help her?
I did.
Did it make a difference?
I have in the past. No, it didn't. Okay. It made it, it entangled us.
Okay, that's too bad. Because, you know, it's not a sin to take on the burden of obligation. It's okay. So, you know, if you ended up helping her in the end, we can celebrate. It's okay. You know, you're allowed. But this time you didn't, so I'm sorry.
But it wasn't my job.
It wasn't your job. So
it was my job to set the conditions and to work with that.
Yeah, yeah. We want to be careful how much responsibility we take for how other people are and how they feel.
Yeah, I guess that's what I mean. Thank you.
So there's a...
We've got two here.
Good topic, because I've been working with this the past week. So, do we choose anger, or does anger happen and then we choose how to respond to it? Because I haven't always chosen anger, which I think has not been the best for me. And something came up this week, and I chose anger. I tried to choose it generously and as lovingly as possible. But I felt for me that I hadn't chosen anger for so long that it was time to choose it. And I spent a whole week struggling with that. But I actually think that that was the right choice. And I'm not... anger seems to be something that arises. I guess I'm struggling with that we choose anger because it arises. And then I think maybe the choice is how we respond, or am I not seeing that correctly?
Yeah, I'm not sure how to answer exactly, but my way of understanding this is, because I've looked at this kind of issue, is that we only have choice when we see the choice. If we don't see the choice, we don't have choice. But it's possible to heighten your perception so that you can see more and more moments of choice, and then you have more choice. So when I was in my 20s, I got fascinated with how I fell in love with people. So I wanted to see, do I have any choice in this matter? So I'd pay very careful attention, you know, like, best I could, you know, with this kind of phenomena. You know, I'd see someone, ooh. You know, the moment of kind of falling in love, you know, was that a choice or was not a choice? And that was very interesting to do. I'm not going to give you the answer to what I found. But you might want to, you know. So also with anger. So anger can rise seemingly out of instinct or just kind of just seems to be so much frustration that it just kind of boils over on its own. It seems like there's no choice. And that's how it is sometimes. And then, but what choice do you have? What choice does there exist in the anger? So one of the choices is anger doesn't have to be acted on. So there's choice about how we act on it. And the question you're asking, is it sometimes useful to be angry or act on angry or anger or allow the anger to surface or stimulate the anger? I think there's a time and season for everything. But, hopefully you have a lot of wisdom and understanding. But part of the answer to your question about is the anger somehow the right response in certain situations has a lot to do with what other skills we've developed. If that's the best option, maybe so. I'm not saying yes, but maybe so. But if a person has learned sophisticated forms of communication, other approaches, other things, and is skilled in using them, then maybe it wasn't necessary to be angry. And so, you know, So that's my thoughts. Is that enough for now? Okay. So it is time to end. And sorry for those people who had your hands up. So the last thing I'll say about this, I said that this flowing of the rain down the mountainside, the Buddha uses that as a simile both for putting in place the conditions and the flow of conditionality for our own inner life and practice, but also for the influence, the effect we can have on the world around us and our society and how society unfolds. And it's possible that what we develop in ourselves and cultivate in ourselves is inseparable from how that works in our society. That it, maybe it's the same things. We cultivate generosity and kindness and compassion here, it benefits others. If you cultivate mindfulness, equanimity, patience, wisdom, it benefits others and yourself. So may you consider what conditions you would like to put in place as you go forward in this life, this precious life of yours. Thank you.